back with you on a busy Monday. We kick off a new week, Monday, April 12th, 2021, right here on Connecticut Today. In the 3 o'clock hour, Nick Kovacevic joined us. His company is teaming with others in the burgeoning legal marijuana business, and he's urging folks to watch for some of those investment opportunities as more and more states, maybe Connecticut, adopt recreational legal marijuana. The governor joined us live in the 4 p.m. hour. Governor Lamont on the latest COVID update. 5 p.m. hour, former Republican State Senator Len Susio joined us to delve deeper into the most recent rate request by Eversource. And Len gave you a couple of things to look for on your utility bills. And I also had some thoughts during the show on a tragedy this past weekend, a three-year-old among those killed in Hartford. And unfortunately, some of our politicians not wasting time to use that in some outright political grandstanding. Governor Lamont, I think this was proper for him to do in the middle stages of that COVID vaccine update that you just heard a few minutes ago right here on Connecticut Today. He invited a well-known Hartford minister on to talk about just a fatal shootings. I'm sorry. Fatal shootings over, over what happened this past weekend. A three-year-old shot a 17-year-old shot in Hartford. And I understand when things like this happen. And I understand that there is always the why. And again, I never hesitate to say that, you know, my family has been touched by gun violence. And I know there's always the discussions of, well, people are on edge because of COVID, and people are on edge because of their economic state in life. And people are on edge because they're angry or this and the other. Okay, that to me, that's all ancillary stuff. When are we going to face down the fact? And I know a lot of people don't like to talk about it. But when are we going to face down the fact that in a lot of urban areas, in cities like Hartford, New Haven, or Bridgeport, it continues year in and year out. It never gets better. It may ebb and flow, but it never gets better to the point of where some people can relax. What am I talking about? There is a chunk of the population in these cities, and I've talked to, like, the mayor of New Haven, the previous mayor of New Haven, or one of the ones, John DeStefano, when I worked in New Haven, and he used to tell me, he would say, Paul, there's not a heck of a lot of people causing 95 or 98% of the crime. He thought in New Haven at the time it was a few hundred. You hear that from other mayors as well. There is a cadre, a very, very, very small segment of people in Bridgeport, in Hartford, and New Haven who, as I've heard Mayor Joe Ganim say for Bridgeport, which I think is a very proper thing for him to say, there is a segment of the population that has no regard for human life. They don't. They don't. Who walks around shooting each other? Can we be brave enough to ask that question? Who in the hell walks around shooting each other from cars in a civilized society? Who does that? Who in God's name does that on a consistent basis? Yes, I know there's suburban crime. Yes, I know there's crime in other areas. I get it. But my God, who walks around and does this consistently to the point of, well, we just have, it's in the city, it's an urban problem. When is it not going to be a problem? And I'm not saying that I know the answers, whether or not it's economics, whether or not it's anger, lack of cohesive family units. But my God, we act like, well, you know, it's just stuff that happens. And most of the time it is horrible. A three-year-old caught in the crossfire, a 17-year-old. I mean, I don't know when this gets fixed. I don't know how it gets fixed. Do you know how it gets fixed? You tell me. And the worst part of it is when feckless politicians jump on this as a gun issue. Connecticut U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, our junior senator, he tweets out on Saturday over the weekend, I just found this. Now, a three-year-old killed. Chris Murphy tweets, the response from government to this cannot be nothing. A three-year-old is dead. Do not let yourself believe this is inevitable. Well, Senator, with all due respect, it's been inevitable for about 30 or 40 years. Now, I continue with his tweet. And the flow of illegal guns into places like Hartford is made possible by the holes in our background check system. Okay, Senator Murphy, with all due respect, I'm not surprised you're grandstanding on this. I'm not. But do you have any solid proof or solid evidence that a faulty background check or a lack of said background check, Senator, do you have any evidence at all? Any? Now, we may see it come out in the future, and I'll certainly report it and give the senator kudos here. But do you have any solid evidence at all that a break in the background check system or something like that is the result, is what killed this three-year-old innocent child? Do you know that? Because if you do, come forward with it. If you don't, then, Senator, with all due respect, why don't you just wait? And let us, absorb what happened here. Let the police investigate it. If this was an illegal weapon, which it probably was, I don't think too many of these inner-city gangs are NRA members, then let's look into how that weapon was obtained. But again, it is mind-numbing how our two members of the U.S. Senate, Mr. Blumenthal and Mr. Murphy, will at any moment take it. It's always a political shot, especially with Chris Murphy. I don't get it. I do. And I do get it, because then if you read the responses to Mr. Murphy's tweet, it's, oh, you're right, Senator, it's the NRA. And notice how when there's an inner city shooting in Bridgeport, in Hartford or New Haven, it's always the NRA's fault. It's always the NRA's fault. It's never the gangbanger's fault. It's never the fault of people who think that taking a human life is not that big of a deal. But our two senior members of Congress seem to, at least Mr. Murphy does. I haven't seen a Richard Blumenthal tweet on this. But at least Mr. Murphy thinks that this is a background check issue. The flow of illegal guns into places like Hartford is made possible by holes in our background check system. So how exactly would a tighter background check system? We're not talking about a system to weed out illegal gun purchases now. How would a tighter background check system done above the board, how would that have eliminated or prevented this case? Fair question, I think. Keeps a close eye on the marijuana industry. He's involved in it. And again, a lot of people, folks, looking at Connecticut here in the middle of Massachusetts, where pot and marijuana byproducts are already legal, near New Jersey and New York, where both states are now on their way to doing it, near Rhode Island, which is still kind of discussing things. But will we in the land here of steady habits do this or not? Nick Kovacevic is the guest. He's a contributor to Forbes magazine and the CEO of Kushco Holdings. Nick, hi, Paul at WICC here in stoic, puritanical Connecticut. How are you, sir?
Hey, Paul, I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. So is the Kush part of the company what I think it's supposed to be? Am I good with that? Do I get this right?
You do. You get credit. You know your stuff.
And, wait a minute now. Yeah. See, my producer's in on it. Yeah, so I figured, oh, the old strawberry kush here. But, Nick, seriously, before we get into the business of all this, the legislation of all this, what is Kushco Holdings? Tell my audience about that.
So we're an ancillary cannabis company, meaning we actually don't touch the plant, but we supply supplies and materials such as packaging, child-resistant packaging, vape pens, empty. We even sell things like ethanol and butane that are used to extract the cannabis oil. We sell all of this stuff to the cannabis operators that actually do touch the plant. We're a publicly traded company. We actually announced a merger with another publicly traded company that does ancillary business as well, called Greenlane, and they trade under the NASDAQ ticker symbol GNLN.
So, Nick, obviously just that explanation there, what your company does and your relationships, I think, you know, should enlighten people to this, whether or not they're personally in favor of legal weed or not, that this is not just somebody being allowed by a state to go to a local store and buy stuff or grow stuff on their own. This is going to be, and already is, I guess, Nick, a huge industry with ancillary contracts and services, just like many others.
Exactly. A lot of people just think about the companies that are actually cultivating and selling the marijuana products, which the latest study showed has already created over 300,000 jobs in the country. But it doesn't equate or account for all of the additional jobs and all of the additional economic benefit for ancillary companies, companies like Kushco, companies like Greenlane, but also, you know, your traditional HVAC companies. Your companies that are supplying power, you know, the technology companies, the consulting companies, all of these companies supporting the industry are going to get added business as well as the industry continues to progress and open up in new states.
Nick Kovacevic is the guest CEO of Kushco Holdings. Nick, hang on. We'll be right back with you talking about the ancillary aspects of possible marijuana legalization here in Connecticut for adult recreational use. More with Nick coming up first. Traffic and weather together. 2:36 on WICC. Yeah, Trumbull all over Fairfield County. In fact, over the state of Connecticut. Not yet there with legalization of recreational marijuana and talking about all the ancillary stuff that may come with that, stuff maybe that you could invest in without actually buying the stuff. Our guest for a few more moments is Nick Kovacevic. He is the CEO of Kushco. Nick joins us again. Nick, one of the things I think that, or you tell me if this is scaring off investors, or could it be, the notion that technically, Nick, marijuana is still illegal. And I know people say, and you probably hear this, well, that's not a big deal. It's moving forward anyway. But then, Nick, you know, there are some people who say, hey, why doesn't the Fed just go ahead and legalize it? What are your thoughts on that?
Look, I think it is a big problem. And particularly with institutional investors, there's, you know, large funds out there that just can't take that risk. Sometimes they even have, you know, documents precluding them from doing that, investing in anything that isn't fully federally legal. And at this point, even though the general population agrees, hey, the train's left the station, there's really very little to no risk. Still, that's too much risk for a lot of these institutional investors, which is why they're waiting for these companies to be able to list on NASDAQ. As I mentioned, we're in the middle of a merger with Greenlane where we'll be listed on NASDAQ. But that's only because we don't touch the plant. We're an ancillary company.
Yeah.
Whereas the companies that we service, and these are phenomenal companies, they're U.S. companies, they're growing at tremendous clips, they're producing meaningful amounts of revenue and profit, yet they're not able to list on the major exchanges, NASDAQ or NYSE. Instead, they're forced to list on the Canadian Securities Exchange and the over-the-counter exchange. And so, again, a lot of these institutional investors who would like to participate, they simply cannot. And it's creating a situation where these companies aren't being properly valued at what they should be worth, which is slowing down their economic investment. They'd love to do more acquisitions. They'd love to open new facilities. All of that takes capital. And if you can't be treated fairly on the same playing field with other companies that can list on NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange, you're at a disadvantage to accessing that capital and therefore growing and building out your business.
Yeah, Nick, I would assume that if that roadblock was dropped through federal legislation, I mean, when you talk about the institutional investors like companies that put together 401k plans or retirement plans mm-hmm. or investment portfolios, you know, I have some friends of mine who are retired, and they always tell me the key to my portfolio. I was talking about this with someone last week. It's not the NYSE. It's not the Amex. It's NASDAQ, which kind of surprised me a little.
Yeah, exactly. NASDAQ has really positioned themselves well as the exchange of choice for high-growth companies. One of the reasons why we're listing there through the Greenlane merger. But this is the exchange where all the tech companies have gone to. And so investors, especially younger generation, they're thinking not, 5 years out. They're thinking a few decades out. And technology and these high growth companies are just moving at such a different speed that they want to take advantage of that. And so, again, cannabis is a sector that checks all those boxes. It's got a huge potential market. It's only growing. The companies that are in it are executing. Cannabis legalization is a value that generally resonates well with the younger generation. And they unfortunately can't take advantage of many of these opportunities because they're investing through companies like Robinhood. And they won't even list these cannabis companies because, again, they're not traded on NASDAQ or NYSE. So it is yet to be corrected. There's a initiative called the Safe Banking Act yeah. that people are hopeful might include some safe harbor provisions to allow companies to list on the exchanges. Still TBD. We're also waiting on Chuck Schumer, who's promised a federal legalization overhaul bill. So we'll see if we can get that out here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That was going to be my next point, Nick, that Chuck Schumer has said that he wants to end this, federal illegality of this, which not only for business would allow universities to do more medical studies, more addiction studies, whatever. What are you hearing inside? I mean, if anything, from your lobbyist, does a bill like that now with a Democrat in the White House and a slim majority, thanks to the VP in Congress, does this really have a shot or not?
Well, as it sits with what you just mentioned, right, it doesn't seem like it would. However, there's been some developments, and one big development is that actually there's a new coalition founded by actually Charles Koch that was just announced. I think it's called the Cannabis Freedom Alliance.
Yeah.
And there, that's big news, right? Because the Cannabis Freedom Alliance, which, is backed by a lot of celebrities as well, left-wing celebrities and also right-wing folks like Charles Koch. It's truly a bipartisan coalition, yeah. and this could help get some of those Republicans over the hump. I also have talked to some of my friends in the federal government that yeah. have said it's less partisan as it is generational. So we know that a lot of the younger Republicans do support this, and there's a lot of seats changing hands here next year where some of the older generational folks are stepping down. So if you bring in new younger generation seats into the House and the Senate, again, this could realign priorities to make cannabis legalization a reality. So a lot of moving parts, and we'll see how it plays out. But it is going to be an uphill battle, despite the fact that now 75% of the population believes it should be legal federally or left up to the states to decide. And the federal government is at odds with that, still deeming cannabis a Schedule I drug, which is the worst. It's worse, ranked worse than LSD and heroin.
Yeah, I never understood. I've never understood that, Nick. I mean, how can – and look, I haven't smoked since I got out of college because I don't have the money. And when I was in college, everybody else was buying it. So that was my economic model. But I never quite understood that. And, Nick, I was told by somebody once, and maybe you've heard this, part of the reason that it is maybe Schedule I, and down through history, the hemp fiber. The hemp industry was seen at one time, Nick, as a major threat to the cotton industry. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think there certainly has to be some ulterior motives to why it would get put on such a high scheduling. And, you know, I think the hypocrisy is clear because you now have companies that have been FDA approved for drugs using cannabis when the definition of federal or Schedule One mm-hmm. says there's no medicinal value to this drug. Obviously, that's been, you know, now proven by another branch of the federal government to be untrue. So people are seeing this discrepancy. They're wanting to fix it. Now the question is how, right? Do you go the incremental step-by-step approach where you could get bipartisan support and actually move down the path? Or do you say, hey, it's not enough if we're just addressing this piecemeal. We need a comprehensive federal legalization initiative, which seems to be the position for a lot of folks, and I don't disagree, but maybe something that can't actually get done right at this very moment.
All right, Nick, I'm sure we have people listening out there that say, hey, I can't get it in my 401k or my retirement plan, but if they're interested, Nick, in investing in Cushco or in the company that just you just merged with, what could they do? How would they find a listing and go about looking into your company?
Yeah, well, the good news is Greenlane, who we're set to merge with, they're already traded on NASDAQ under the symbol GNLN, and you will be able to find that on most of the brokerage accounts, including Robinhood. There's also a great ETF called MSOS that does encompass a lot of the leading U.S. cannabis operators through their ETF, and that is available on the major exchange and also through those apps. So I would look there, and if you want any information on Cushco, our IR website is great. Just go to Cushco.com, and you can read all about what we're doing. And really appreciate you having me on, talking through some of this stuff. And I'm hopeful that Connecticut will join the growing number of states that have legalized for adult use. And it just seems right, given the positioning and the climate that we're in. And I'll be able to hopefully make a trip out there and see you, and I can supply. You don't have to worry about it.
My general manager just went, there are FCC regulations about what can be in the studio, Nick. Now, outside the studio, that's a little different. Hey, Nick Kovacevic has been the guest. Check out Cushco online. Or, Nick, what was that first investment figure you get? You gave me before
the ticker GNLN.
GNLN. All right, Nick, thanks. Be good. We'll talk down the road. Thanks.
All right, cheers.
Be good. Nick Kovacevic, GNLN. GNLN, the investment code. Check it out.
He's going to talk for a few minutes. You know, COVID is not the only thing that's stealing lives. So is gun violence and what that means to our community. And Pastor Miles can talk a little bit about what he's hearing here in Hartford and what he's saying. Let me tell you first about our COVID daily summary, going back 3 days for Friday. What I think you see here is our numbers have stabilized, and I think that's better than some of the alternatives. 3% positivity rate, hospitalizations down a little bit over the last 3 days. Fatalities up, that's a 3-day number. Overall, our positivity rate is a little bit lower than it's been over the last few weeks. I think we're making progress. That said, look around the rest of the world. You can see Europe is flaring up in lockdown. India is flaring up in lockdown. Brazil is flaring up in lockdown. Idaho and Michigan here slightly closer to home in locking down. So we take nothing for granted. But I think we continue to make good progress here in our region, particularly here in the state of Connecticut, in part because of the vaccine. And we're having good progress in the vaccine. Look, we finally have a majority of the people of Connecticut, the adults, have been vaccinated. 52% of adults 16 and above have received the vaccine. I'm particularly impressed that 83% of those 65 and above have now been vaccinated, have had their first dose. 83%. You maybe remember going back a few months, 50% are vaccine hesitant, 50% may not get vaccinated. What are we going to do? I'd hope that 65 and above are canary in a coal mine, and you see that that's 83%, 71% of 55 to 64. I'd like to think those numbers continue to go up as we move towards really herd immunity. 16 to 44, that's 30%. That's up from 20% just a few days ago. Very important that young people continue to get vaccinated as they've been doing. That's really what's going to protect us from what you see going on in some of these other countries and regions of the country. We expect from Pfizer in particular eligibility for vaccinations to open up. Right now, they're the only ones to do 16 to 18. Everybody does 18 and above. Looks like Pfizer is going to get a green light in the next month or so for a younger demo, 12 to 15. That's really important because it's the younger demographic where not suffering many complications, but suffering a lot of infections. So really urging them to get vaccinated and really hopeful that the younger age group, 12 to 16, will be able to be vaccinated and vaccinated soon. The only worry I see in these numbers is J&J. They hit a speed bump at their Maryland manufacturing facility. We're receiving less vaccinations this week than we did last week, gone from about 288,000 last week to about 180,000 or so this week. That shortfall is really all related to Johnson & Johnson. And I'm afraid we don't have any clarity on what we can expect next week, but we'll be ramping up again, but perhaps slowly. That said, more positive, there are vaccine appointments available. Probably in the morning is the best time to try. Every day we get new vaccines available, not as many as we had the week before, but still tens of thousands. And those are tens of thousands of appointments opening up every day. You could have found appointments this morning for later today. Haven't been able to say that in some months. You go to ct.gov, COVID vaccine, or dial the telephone, 877-918-2224. And do us a favor. Let's say you were there refreshing, you couldn't get your vaccine appointment for 2 weeks, then you checked and you got a vaccine appointment for tomorrow. Please cancel the other vaccine appointment. Makes our lives a lot easier and makes one more person eligible a little bit sooner. Next up is from our friend Reg Eady, who was co-chairman with Deirdre of our vaccination advisory group, head of Trinity Health. They did a vaxathon. They did it here in Hartford. Sort of everybody's trying different ways to get your attention, get you there. This vaxathon was 24 hours, round the clock, led by 300 volunteers who made an enormous effort. There at the 4,000 people got vaccinated over the course of that 24-hour period. Over half of them people of color, for which we're, very thankful. So to Reg and the Trinity Health team, well done. We continue to do everything we can to bring vaccines to the people. Make it easier for you to get vaccinated, no questions asked, free of charge, and increasingly you don't need an appointment, just come and get vaccinated. You can see that FEMA mobile unit, the one that vaccinated thousands of people in Bridgeport, is now moving on to New Britain, North Canaan, Winstead, and Hartford. You can see then the Griffin mobile vans, which are the smaller ones, a little like the ice cream truck in yellow down there. You see where they're going. You know, sort of easy. Just go to the mayor's website, go to the East Hartford Facebook page. You'll be able to find, when the van's going to be there. And also, as you know, we've had hundreds of people knocking on doors, making telephone calls this weekend, last week, going forward. They'll be doing that in New Haven and Waterbury and Hartford and Hamden. Just reminding you, the van is going to be there. If you're in Winstead, by the way, and you get that shot, you may go to the American Mural Project. I was there this weekend. It's quite remarkable. Celebrates people who do the work in our country. All right, so encouraging people to get vaccinated. I think this is important. There's a lot of noise about Big Brother and vaccinations. You have no right to ask me and the such. I'm finding as I look around the state and our country and even internationally, people are doing everything we can to encourage you and incent you to get vaccinated and give you the right to make sure you're there with other people who have been vaccinated. So a couple of little headlines that Josh found I thought were nice. Shot for a shot. New Orleans bar. You get a vaccine shot, you'll get a free shot of alcohol. Come on in. Free with your COVID shot. You get a beer, arcade tokens, Krispy Kreme donuts. Remember, you get a donut a day as long as it lasts if you've gotten vaccinated. So maybe we should move those mobile vans up to the Krispy Kreme locations. You can get a twofer while you're there. Major League Baseball pushes incentives to encourage all their players to get vaccinated. I was interested. You can now play cards. You can do a little poker even without the mask. Sit in a group if you've been vaccinated. Otherwise, you're going to have to just listen to your iPhone. The Miami Heat, sort of interesting, down in Florida. I didn't know the governor liked this, but they've got a special VIP section for Miami Heat basketball fans. VIP standing for vaccinated important people. And there, they're sort of courtside seats, preferred seating. And you know you're sitting next to somebody else who's been vaccinated. Movie theaters, free popcorn. We're doing everything we can to encourage you to do the right thing for you in your community. And finally, I'll just take this before I pass the baton. We're making good progress in terms of our proms, graduations, parks, beaches. In terms of proms and graduations, a lot of questions, a lot of planning going on. I think you should be able to count on it. We're going to be able to get this done. I would urge the later you can book it, the better. Just give you a little more flexibility in case something untoward happens. I think we'll be in pretty good shape. The later you do it, the warmer it is, more likely it is you'll be able to have that graduation or prom outside. The later you do it, the higher the vaccination rates we have. What a difference that's going to make. And I was, in Bark Hempstead at one of their beautiful parks, the People's Park, on Friday with Katie Dykes. I was amazed. We kept our parks and our beaches open all during 2020 and now. They're open at full capacity now. Last year, they're open at partial capacity just because we didn't want things to get too crowded. And it was the busiest year in our history for our parks and beaches. People really love. If you're going to suffer through COVID, being in a state like Connecticut where you can get outside a little fresh air is a really important thing. But that said, let me pass the baton over to Pastor Motz. It was a tough weekend, a really tough weekend. A weekend with two needless gun-related fatalities, a 3-year-old and a 16-year-old. And Pastor Motz is on the front lines when it comes to, talking to young people, talking to their parents, COVID and violence. Pastor Motz, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you for having me, Governor. I do want to just say thank you so much for your leadership to our state, especially during the last year. We really do appreciate you. I am challenged, however, after talking with so many people about what happened on Saturday. And first, let me say and give my condolences to the family of Rondell Jones and the family of Jamari Preston. Very senseless killings, unnecessary. Beautiful children with a great future in front of them. Dreams. Their families had dreams for them. And to have something like this happen is just devastating. My mother was, impacted by this. I have a 3-year-old granddaughter. And so this just sort of shook me in a different way. And I really feel what is going on right now, Governor, is that we're fighting a spirit of fear. The vaccine has gotten people afraid. The virus has gotten people afraid. And now there are people who are afraid for their own vitality. And one of my favorite Bible verses says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. And I am praying and I am hoping that we as a community would come together in the power of love to heal, to bring strength, and ultimately to bring victory to our entire community. But we have got to come to some kind of way where we look at our hearts and we see, is this the Hartford we want? Is this the Connecticut we want? Is this the world we want where our children are being killed? It's one thing when people can make decisions to do certain things, but a three-year-old, I mean, come on. We've got to fix this, and we've got to fix it fast. We've got to get love in our homes. We've got to get love in our community. We've got to love one another, and that starts with, I believe, with forgiveness. Let's stop placing blame on other people, and let's just forgive and move forward into how we're going to make our community better. I'm so happy to hear about the Vaxathon that happened this past weekend, to hear so many people got vaccinated. We can't walk in fear. When I was a kid, I couldn't go to school if I didn't get vaccinated, you know? Let's be safe. Let's care about each other. Let's love each other. And then let's make Hartford and let's make Connecticut better. I believe this is, Hartford is not just the city of God, but Connecticut is the state of God. This is where God reigns. I know they call us the chosen frozen, but we know this is where the Spirit of God is. But we need to love each other, and we got to come together and figure out how to do this.
We got to care about each other. We got to love each other, as you say, Pastor. We remember Randall, member Jamari. Our hearts go out to their parents and their friends. Pastor Mont also is a pastor to the police chaplain. He knows how people are grieving across this city and this state.
Absolutely. Can I very quickly?
Please.
The police are going through too. You know, I've spoken with them as well. They're challenged because they want to do the very best job that they can. Every single police officer that I've talked to says, I took this job to help people. And they're feeling like their hands are tied. It's just been such a crazy time to go from 8 murders in all of 2020 and now 8 so far in 2021. My mother said something. She said, I almost wish we were on lockdown again. And I know nobody wants that, but we have got to figure out, we cannot have our police stressed and traumatized while we're stressed and traumatized. And then health workers are stressed and traumatized. We got to take a break. We got to take a breather. And we got to work hard to come together and help each other.
As you say, caring and love for one another, that's the vaccine to prevent gun violence as well.
Yes.
Any questions? Josh and Paul are here as well.
News 8.
Good afternoon, everyone. Deborah, you talked again about the amount of J&J and how much less than we had been getting. Because of that, and again, you mentioned the vans going out, will you make them exclusively? Is that the one place that Johnson & Johnson, because there's so few now, is that the one place you'll bring in those vans to get to those areas?
Yeah, Josh tells me we prioritize every J&J we have to those mobile vans. Is that exclusive right now, Josh?
There's a couple other very small areas where it's needed, but the vast majority of the Johnson & Johnson we have is going into the mobile units, and for now at least we think we're able to continue to fully supply them.
And Governor, with respect to, you mentioned again, graduations and proms, and that you remain confident that those will happen. You know, as far as it being later than or as late as possible, obviously there's a certain time frame they're under there. What else can you say about both the graduations and proms at this time?
I can tell you that it's warmer and you're more likely to be vaccinated in June than you are in May. I can tell you that I feel very confident that your prom and your graduation is going to take place, hopefully outside, and get vaccinated. Then everybody around you can be as safe as you are.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, Governor, kind of following up on that question, you know, as the variants spread, especially among younger people, what measures are in place right now to track this in the schools, especially as, you know, the prom and the graduation guidance was released today?
I can tell you, as we look around the rest of the country, you're right, Matt, we've seen school-related sports have been a source of some flare-ups. We've had some teams that have had to quarantine. Generally, the schools sort of reflect the community spread, you know, more broadly. We have not seen as much of that here in Connecticut, and that's one of the reasons we are beginning to emphasize the 16 to 18-year-old, and then even the 12 to 15. If we can get them vaccinated sooner rather than later, that's a big plus. But right now, our schools are able to operate and operate safely, for which I'm very thankful.
And a kind of quick question on the Naugatuck Valley, because that was the source of a hot spot last week. Has a potential source for those clusters of cases been identified, especially, you know, since the Waterbury Health Department says that there has been a significant rise in cases in those 18 and younger?
I don't think track and trace has identified any one particular thing. I think it's more of those informal socializations, maybe a little less likely to wear the mask, maybe a little less likely to get the vaccines. But I don't think there's anything particular. Is there, Josh, that we point to?
No, I think that sums it up well, Governor.
Thank you.
NBC Connecticut.
Good afternoon, everyone. Governor, sticking with the prom and graduation, has there been any changes or expected changes to the number of people that would be allowed outdoors, mandating testing, anything like that?
No changes at this point, but I think outdoors you're going to have a fair amount of capacity there so those proms and graduations can go forward as planned.
And is it still expected that at the end of April, the state will start seeing a vaccine surplus, or has that now changed due to J&J?
Well, you can see we have a little more room right now. As I said, you could have gone on first thing this morning, and there were at least a few spots open for later today. So I think we're getting closer to a balance. I'd like to get those J&J vaccines back in force, but that may be another 10 days.
And lastly, are you continuing to notice hesitancy for some to get the vaccine? And how significant of a hurdle do you see that to get herd immunity? How concerning is it for you?
A, I'll start by the fact that I'm encouraged that you have over 80% of the folks, 65 and above, 70 above. That's a good deal compared to where we thought we might be a few months ago. I worry that right now the infection rate is highest among the younger folks, especially 20 to 30 years old, the so-called invincibles. So you can see we've made a particular effort to make sure they know how important it is to get vaccinated. So far, they're getting vaccinated. Keep going, guys.
To our Eversource customers, they want a rate increase. You know that? A lot of people's Eversource. What do you get after the tropical storm, Isaias? Well, the guy that used to be a Republican state Senate member who's been in and out of the General Assembly and still keeps an eye particularly on crime issues and on issues involving consumers and what we pay and what we don't pay and all of that. Former state Senator Len Susio was with us. Len, it's been a while. How are you, sir?
It's been too long, Paul. Let's catch up.
Who's buying the first round? You or I? Yeah. So, yeah, thank you.
This is over.
Thank you. So, Len, you sent me something that's interesting. And I guess a few weeks ago, and a lot of people, you know, they may have missed this in the flow of everyday news. Eversource, rate increase here. Len, explain what that's all about and what you have found. And what are the steps here that they have to go through before this happens?
Well, I'm certain every single one of your member of your audience, as well as you, will recall the big brouhaha that broke out last July before the storm hit and deflected attention from the rate increases that Eversource and UI had succeeded in getting approval from PURA, the Public Utility Regulatory Authority. The increases were so large that it provoked an enormous public outcry mm-hmm. and resulted in the Public Utility Regulatory Authority basically saying, let's put the brakes on this for now. Let's reconsider and we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
So they temporarily rolled back the rate hikes, but it was only temporary. And they had hearings only a few weeks ago in New Britain at the Public Utility Regulatory Authority headquarters. And Eversource is looking for what's tantamount to a 13.2% rate increase on its delivery charges. That ought to shock the daylights out of people. They're going to try to disguise it. They're touting it as only an 8.2% increase. And what they're proposing to keep it down even a little bit more is they're going to spread it out in a couple of increases, and it'll be carried on for 3 years.
Oh, good.
So they're trying to hoodwink the public into thinking it's not as bad as it is. But I can assure you it's an outrageous increase, and don't fall for the malarkey.
And Len, you mentioned something a couple of seconds ago, delivery charge, and it makes my – now, these are the times, Len, when I thank God on my knees that I'm a customer of Wallingford Electric. God bless the center of the universe.
I'm envious. What a deal. Move to Wallingford. We could have the whole state move into Wallingford.
Lowest rates in the state, baby. No, but Len, seriously, yeah. You look at every little nickel and dime on these bills. And you know, Len, a lot of people don't realize that when you pay an electric bill, you're not just paying for electricity, infrastructure, and those words you used, delivery charge. I mean, I explain that to people, and their heads explode, but that's a major part of people's bills now.
Oh, yes. It's complex, and it's designed to basically fool people. They give you so many details that most people's eyes start spinning when they look at the bill. They don't know. What's the public benefits charge? That sounds something like something good, right? It can't be wrong. I'm paying for something that's for public benefit. But the truth is this. What's driving this, there's three factors. One is I believe that Eversource and United Illuminating are allowed an exorbitant profit on what they do, because they are in a very secure business. I don't ever remember the last time a public utility failed. They're basically about the safest investment you can make, and yet they're allowed to make 9 to 12% rate of return on their investments, which you and I go to a bank today, we can't even get a 0.5%, let alone 9, 10, 11, 12%. So that's one thing that drives it. But again, that's tolerated by the regulators and by the politicians in Hartford, because they get their piece of the pie too. How do they do that? They do it in two ways. One is on the delivery side, there's what they call these public benefits or public policy charges. They're tantamount on the delivery side to about 30% of the delivery charges. They got nothing to do with delivery, but they're buried in that part of the bill. And so it exaggerates the cost of delivery, which is one reason why, Paul, like you were saying, why does it cost so much more to deliver than what it costs to generate or create electricity? Well, that's one factor. It's the politicians in Hartford whose policies are imposed on utilities. They have no choice. They have to pass this on to consumers. And that's one thing that does it. And the third factor that affects Connecticut's exorbitant electric rates is on the generation side, where Eversource can't make a profit, supposedly, buried in the generation charge is a hybrid of rates that have to do with the source of energy. And there's an increasing amount of, quote, renewable energy sources, which are going in there. And that costs triple what the gas-fired plants cost, for example. So the generation charges are inflated because of pure politics out of Hartford again. So to reiterate, there's three factors that affect this. One is, I believe, the exorbitant profits that are allowed to the public utilities. Number two is the political mandate on the delivery side for these public benefits charges. And the third thing is this mandate to include ever-increasing amounts of extremely expensive and highly unreliable renewable energy. And to put it in perspective, Paul, like you were saying, Wallingford's rates are about 13 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, I know.
For Eversource, it's 24 cents. 24 cents versus, this is not like 14 cents versus 13 cents.
Yeah.
The average for the country is just a little over 13 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yep.
Connecticut's got the highest electric rates in the entire continental United States.
And Len, you wonder why. And Len, you wonder why you and I have friends and relatives just fleeing out of the state. And Len, over the weekend, I was talking to a couple in my building in Wallingford, said, they're now, not because of the power, but for other factors, they're moving to Florida. I have relatives, friends that have moved to Florida. And listen, I understand Florida isn't for everybody, or Texas or the Carolinas. But Len, why should Connecticut, little old, the land of steady habits here in Connecticut, why should we pay the most for electricity in the country? I've never understood that.
Well, again, it's dictated by the politics out of Hartford more than anything else. They can talk about the fact that, yes, we have certain disadvantages here. We have we don't have adequate gas pipelines coming in, for example, and we're relying more and more on natural gas, which is an incredibly effective,
yes,
inexpensive source of electricity and low carbon emissions, too, by the way. So it's much cleaner burning than coal was, for example, or oil. So there's a lot of advantages to it. But again, the politics have prevented that from happening. And look at the deal that happened with Millstone. One of the things that's in the bill that's driving this up is the deal that the legislature forced regarding Millstone. What do I mean by that? The legislature said you, the utilities, have to buy energy, half the output of Millstone for whatever price you can negotiate. Well, yeah, they wound up negotiating 5 cents per kilowatt hour. The spot market or the day ahead market for electric wholesale prices was a penny and a half. So it's like three times more expensive than, and this is buried in your bill. This is because of politics out of Hartford. So yes, I blame to some extent the greedy bosses, you know, like the boss who just got retired out of Eversource, who was making $350,000 per week, not per year, per week.
Boy,
and he couldn't be prepared for Storm Isaiah, which happened last year. Talk about getting overpaid, right?
Oh, Len, listen, I do have to run, but thanks for coming on. Listen, yeah, I get your emails all the time. You know, keep me updated on this, and I love to have you on because you actually break it down and you explain it. You're not partisan about it. You're just saying all of this, and I've seen this explained, Len. Yes, all of this comes from what our lawmakers, frankly, on both sides of the aisle, decide to vote for or against. Len Susie will be good. Len, we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
And don't be shocked by your May 1st bill, Paul.
Oh, good. Oh, great. Thanks, Len. Appreciate it. Thanks. There you go, folks.